start? If they have not yet asked a Vietnam essay, but we're getting so into the future that that's askable now. Because the story runs from 1964 to 1975 and really even before that to some degree. So where does the American part of the Vietnam story start?
Well, actually it starts at Wilson at...
Yeah, you can drop that in if you want. But steadily, where does the story start?
Dien Bien Phu.
With Dien Bien Phu, which is a number what? It's back on the 50s thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is this the one that I was supposed to have in my car?
This is the 1960-73.
Under the stapler and...
Take the
fence.
Yeah.
What year did Dien Bien Phu occur?
54. Same year as Brown.
As what?
As Brown.
What
yes, same year as Brown. You just find the 60 through 73 sheets and you're in business.
All right. We're going back. We're just switching back to Dien Bien Phu for a second. That's on the 50.
Okay, so as a result of Dien Bien Phu, what did the French choose to do?
Leave.
And when they leave, they create a water. The agreement at Geneva creates what?
Geneva Accords.
Separates Vietnam and North and South. Those elections will be held in 1956. So it creates Laos and Cambodia.
2 years later, there's supposed to be an election to unite these countries.
Is not.
In those 2 years' time, who develops as the leader of the North? Who develops as leader of the South?
Yeah.
First Bao Dai, but he's just edged out by Ngo Dinh Diem. So by 1956, Ho is ready for the... That's his name. Ho was ready for, they do call him that, the elections because he knows he can win.
Yes.
Yim has no desire to hold elections because he knows he'll lose. And the U.S. has been backing Yim because they don't want to see communism spread from north to south, so they agree with not holding the elections also. That causes northern Vietnamese as well as pro-communist southern Vietnamese called Viet Cong later to do what?
Militarily
try to overthrow Yim. If there's not going to be an election, they'll do it militarily. So that's at that point where we start to gradually get drawn more and more into helping Vietnam in the late 50s through Hidden Green Beret help to the early 60s to active support. In fact, in 1962, 2,000 advisors...
That was 20,000.
Should be 2,000. If I wrote 20,000. 2,000 advisors...
Yeah,
I thought it was a
difference.
It's only 18.
So I thought it said 200.
It says 900 to 11,000.
Oh, yeah.
I may be right on the sheet.
What
the initial grant, well, I'm thinking 2,000 in my memory, but number 44, are sent to help him develop his forces, but it is a response in 61 to what? 61, 62 both.
Cuban Missile Crisis.
And the Berlin Wall. With the building of the wall and the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Well, the building of the Berlin Wall is in response to Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah. So what we're getting at is by early 60s, we're getting more and more drawn in, not in an active combat role, but in a supportive role. Then in 63 November, yes, Ronnie, in 63 November, the military of South Vietnam comes to what conclusion?
We're going to lose.
That they're going to lose with Yim. So therefore, they want to... kill their own president, and they supposedly consult the American CIA and get approval. Did Kennedy give his approval?
Because
he was killed 3 weeks later. So,
after
November, there is a run through of about 12 different presidents, and they get one they like by 1967 in Vietnam. We get whom after Kennedy?
LBJ.
And LBJ, how does he differ from JFK on the Vietnam thing? He wants to be more actively involved. He finds more and more that this is the fight against Russia. This is the fight against monolithic communism to be held in Southeast Asia. So he gives more and more active support throughout 64. But he comes to realize that just supporting and just helping them fight this war will probably not succeed, that the Viet Cong will probably overthrow with North Vietnamese help, not Yim, but the South Vietnamese government. So he's got to find a way to get Americans actively in the combat in a way that's justifiable. What does he do? Item 47. He threateningly sends American destroyers into North Vietnamese waters to get them attacked on two different days, and then goes to Congress and asks for the permission or the authority to repel attacks on U.S. forces. That Tonkin Gulf Resolution is the only congressional statutory act that ever justified our involvement in Vietnam. In 1970, Congress repeals the Tonkin Gulf resolution, but by then, I mean, you're in and you can repeal things, but
you're in the quagmire.
Yeah, once you're in, you look unpatriotic, you don't support the troops, even if you're losing type thing. There's lots of parallels here.
1970,
yeah. By then, who's president also? Mm-hmm. So Johnson's even gone by then. So after the, and was there any possible political motives behind the Tonkin Gulf resolution and affair on Johnson's part?
You mean besides getting us in the war?
Besides getting into the war to help stop the spread of communism, any personal political motives?
Getting re-elected.
Getting re-elected a couple months later.
Well, not so re-elected, getting elected.
Why did he have to look super tough?
Because he's a Democrat. They're all weak on communism.
Okay, the thing that the Democrats are weak on communism, was his opponent acting tough?
Yes.
Who's his opponent?
Who was his opponent?
Barry Goldwater, who was very, very hawkish and outspoken about
the
use of
the communist.
He never said that, but he got accused of that. He was very, very provocative in that regards, and so that's why Johnson felt, I've got to look maybe not as crazy tough as Goldwater, but tough enough to get elected.
What was it? They repealed the Tonkin. What was it?
Gulf resolution.
Resolution.
That's in 70. That's later.
Yeah.
73.
So with that, 73 war crimes. But when 64 turns to 65, we finally do commit troops into South Vietnam, and we engage in a bombing of the north in the Ho Chi Minh Trail called what?
Rolling Thunder.
Operation Rolling Thunder of number 48. From 65 to 68, there is a steady, steady buildup of troops from 50,000
to 100,000.
Are we going
to need to know the bombing campaign?
Just that one.
You don't need a linebacker?
Not that I've ever, I don't think it's going to be any close. It's not that big of one. I mean, it may be big,
Ho Chi Minh City,
but it's not by name known. That's what I'm saying. So you get up to nearly 560 or 80,000 troops, and we're still pretty much in the same mess. And that is, you can't win Vietnam like Korea and World War II. Why not?
But what? There's no big cities.
You're not winning and taming areas and bringing them under control because it is a political conflict. You cannot tell who is the enemy and who is not. You capture a village. Once you move on, the Viet Cong are still there. If they were in the village, they move right back in. So since it's a political struggle to win hearts and minds, as they said, you can't use traditional flank warfare body counts as a way of solving the problem. So even with 500,000 troops in there, 68, we don't seem to be winning any better than we were in 64, 65. And that's when, if we move over to the next page.
Are we going to have to cover McNamara's policies during Vietnam?
Is there really that much Vietnam stuff on the test?
There's usually one or two or even three multiple choice, but I'm fearing
Vietnam,
this could be the year of the essay. You know, if
it kind of defines the entire social movement in the 60s.
I think it does too. You could, if you don't have, say your Vietnam choice is paralleled up with trace Native American rights from 1943 to 72. You better know your Vietnam essay. Speaking of minority dropping, here's a name you need to know: Russell Means. Russell Means was head of AIM, the American Indian Movement. MEANS, Russell Means, head of the American Indian Movement. One of the things the American Indian Movement did was after Alcatraz was no longer used as a prison, Indians under the AIM movement took it over and held it until they were finally dislodged by federal forces. On the argument that old treaties said that any land that was once Indian land turned to federal use and then abandoned from federal use returns to India. But they didn't honor that treaty.
When did they honor the treaty?
Helen Hunt Jackson, A Century of Dishonor. Did we ever mention her?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She comes up a lot. Helen Hunt Jackson, A Century of Dishonor. That's the history of broken treaties with India.
HBO is going to have a HBO original movie, Left My Heart at Wounded Knee.
That's a good one. That's
it focuses on some of the
D. Brown
relations.
Published in 1970.
You know the dude that played the Navajo in Wind Talkers?
Uh huh.
He plays the kind of emissary to the white people.
She also kind of
is. Pandering? Yes, it is. On the test? Yes, it is. Cesar Chavez? Why is he? Who is he and why is he important?
I don't know. He's the guy from Mexico, Great Paper Guy.
Yes. Organizer of migrant farm workers in the 70s in California, trying to improve their working conditions.
Starfish.
Yeah. Well, but in the 1970s. So, Cesar Chavez is a leader of Mexican migrant farm workers who fought and argued for better working conditions for pickers and lettuce workers, etc.
I don't know how I learned to do that.
Good education.
A liberal education.
That's right. So back to our Vietnam situation. At the start of 1968, look at number 54. Before we get into 54, think about this. Why are we not winning completely? Why have we not won in Vietnam?
Because we're playing with World War II and Korean War tactics that just don't work against this particular enemy.
Why don't we just move in and just take over everything?
Because then China gets involved. Or not China, but Russia gets involved.
Okay, first thing is you run the risk of ticking off the Russians and the Chinese and making it a third world war.
You can't. We can't tell the difference between
Vietnamese. So therefore, you'd have what responsibility? You'd be in charge of the country forever.
You'd be occupied.
That is my greatest complaint about our current war is we moved one step further into a mess that's even harder to get out, because as long as you're helping one government try to survive and it's not working, you can walk. But if you dismantle that government, just get rid of them, become the government yourself, and then try to put up a government to replace you, and it doesn't work, it's your responsibility. That's why we could leave Vietnam at some point. Can't leave Iran.
Well, they still kind of accuse the U.S. of deserting the South Vietnamese government.
There was a two-year interval.
Hmm. Yeah, the U.S. left in the South Vietnamese government.
Left in 73, and it was 75 when it happened.
And now
but you can understand why we did, can't you? After having been through our World War II lecture, what's the mentation in 1960?
Anything is okay if it stops communism.
Well, if you let, like,
what
if
was wrong
the whole
letting communism
fear of just Germany took over place by place.
That's it. It's the belief that we... Here's just the oddity about foreign policy. Germany did, and Japan and Italy did get away with so much aggression without us stopping them. Why?
Because they
thought they would stop.
Those America
first Nazis. Because we had figured we made the mistake of getting into the needless World War I, let's don't get into the needless World War II, which we needed to get into.
Right.
So then after realizing we should have been more prepared and ready before that, our attitude is we've got to be on guard for the same problems with the Russians, and then we get into unnecessary conflicts trying to make sure that we get into the war we've got to get into.
When
we
do this cycle.
So, yeah, that's the misrepresentation of history twice. And you can make your own judgments about it currently, but I'm going to draw a parallel between 55 and what's going on today. I thought about this as I drove home on Sunday. Here is this seeming stagnant, can't move, more and more troops, no change, can't win, not losing, not winning. But Westmoreland makes the bold claim we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Or, to put it in Cheney terminology, during the last throes of the insurrection. Remember that comment?
Or in the Bush thing, mission accomplished.
Yes.
That's the anniversary today, isn't it?
Is it really?
I think it's 4 years.
So Westmoreland sends that signal that don't be impatient. It's about victory's about to come. And instead, what comes?
More crap.
The Tet Offensive. The New Year's invasion. Which lasts from the end of January through March. Now, by the end of March, what's militarily true of the Tet invasion?
It was a failure.
Total failure. But between all of February and 1st of March, when all the news is that we've been thrown back and 26 cities are under attack and the Saigon embassy is under 6 hours worth of attack on one day's time, how are we feeling about light at the end of the tunnel?
Yeah, right.
There is no light.
So therefore, this looks not almost at an end. This looks what?
Lost.
So people have made up their mind good and well that that's it. It's hopeless. We're stuck. We need out of there. And even after the victory comes, the frame of mind isn't ready for that. And maybe you can draw the parallel. Let's say right now with the surge, Bush claims we've almost won it, and say a gigantic counterinsurgency occurs where they're killing 200-300 a day, and it's happening for a month straight, the worst ever, the worst. Even if after a while we bring that back down and its military seems to be better, where's going to be the mood of the American public by May or by June or August?
Well, we'll have a new president because they'll probably impeach Bush eventually.
Well, if you hear
but would you
so
be willing
much
to
negative for so long, one day a positive isn't
yeah,
going to sway.
Even if they finally bring under control all that huge increase, we're still there.
Well, maybe after this big, huge insurgency, all the insurgents go home.
But for the American public, after what they've been hearing and seeing, they're not going to believe it. They're not going to believe this anymore. So in other words, their feeling is, it's a lost cause, let's get out. That's how people felt by March of 1968. So when you hear all these kind of revisionist historians claiming it's the negative leftist press that even after a victory talked us into defeat, it wasn't just the press, it was the tiredness of people after only, what, 4 years? We've been in how many years?
And which war?
Well, we were involved in Vietnam from August of 64 actively until March of 66, so 3.5 years. But we've been since 2001 and it's 2007.
4 years.
2003, 4 years.
Because this is supposed to be the fourth anniversary of Mission Accomplished.
So you can see how once a public opinion becomes soured on something, some kind of victory is not going to turn things around. So that's where I'm getting at is that for Johnson and for any president, Vietnam has reached the point where people just want a way out. Were you here Sunday?
Yeah.
Okay, so you...
Yeah. I told them I would come in late.
Okay, well then...
I kind of...
Can you read these things? Because that's what I'm getting ready to cover now. And that would be... When Johnson leaves, how do the Nixon-Vietnam policies differ? And what is the... How does the 1973 treaty that ends it characterize? Learn about that. Learn about the way Nixon conducts the war different from Johnson. Because I think if you get a Vietnam essay, you're going to have either compare Nixon to Johnson or cite milestones along the way. And somewhere in all that, be sure to stress public opinion in the form of protests and demonstrations, which is what we're going to look at.
I'll just read about it in Kindle.
It's not long in Kindle. And you've heard that the Johnson part of it, just compare the Nixon part of it.
Okay.
See you then. So we are up to 57, where we mentioned the fact that Johnson in March 31st, 68 announces a bombing halt and also shocks many by claiming he's not going to run for re-election. Look at 59. More detail than you need to know, but this is the list of the various demonstrations and protests. The SDS stands for Students for a Democratic Society. It's a far left-wing quasi-Marxist organization started at the University of Michigan in 1962.
Didn't someone burn themselves? Didn't someone burn themselves?
Those were the Buddhist priests in South Vietnam.
No, I mean, I think like an American did it in the Pentagon.
I know they tried to levitate the Pentagon one time. Didn't work. But the burning themselves part.
That would be cool.
Didn't work.
I wanted to look that up. I think someone burned themselves up.
Jane Fonda. You've heard of Jane Fonda?
The
workout tapes. Also as in going to visit North Vietnam in 1972.
Like standing there watching.
And getting called Hanoi Jane. That didn't go over so well.
And then just the name of the city?
Hanoi, yeah, but the fact that she went to visit Hanoi during the war to see how American bombings had affected the people, that looked pretty unloyal. She was married to Tom Hayden. Where did we study Tom Hayden?
He's a political figure?
He's one of the Chicago Eight in the 68 convention. He's also, back in 62, a founder of SDS. So SDS is a very radical, left-leaning, anti-war student organization which spreads across the country.
John Hayden?
Tom. 67 and 68, there are these anti-war rallies that occur. 69 is what's called the Moratorium Day. If you're familiar with the Tinker case, that's what that was related to, the Black Armband protest.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the rest of that... You don't really need to know the part about Jim Crow Must Go and Mark Rood's Strawberry Statement. That's way too detailed for what they'd ask on an essay.
They do need moratorium.
I think the moratorium day of 1969 is important.
And what was that?
That was a call nationwide for a protest on the war in which students all across the country were expected to wear black armbands to school. And some school policies tried to make them take it off, and it became a challenge of First Amendment free speech rights.
Take a risk for more?
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
You notice how schools today have not tried to force you to be pro-war. You've never heard Dr. Martin or any of the schools take any opinions on those issues. Yeah, it's because they really did try to force people. But the doing of the pledge every morning is a little bit of a nudge in that direction.
Wonder how long that'll actually.
Good point. It's a good point. Until the war on terror is no longer.
It'll end eventually.
Well, we added under God for the Russians, and we're still doing it.
Still doing it.
Look at 60. These statistics. 300,000 draft dodgers went to Canada. 10,000 to Sweden. 10,000 draft dodgers stayed in the country hidden. 250,000 people who were of age never registered. And how many soldiers were in Vietnam? That's almost the same, isn't it? Maybe even more. So when 500,000 are in the war and 500,000 are avoiding serving, by avoiding the draft. What does that tell you about the war?
There's a split, like right down the middle.
Opinion about Vietnam is the most split that America was since the Civil War, and that was the most split since the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, the only thing they burned were draft cards and Lyndon B. Johnson.
Effigies?
Yeah. At Berkeley?
Yeah. As 61 just said here, why is the 26th Amendment war related?
Because it signifies the generation. Because there's a theory that if you can old enough to go off and die for your country, that you're old enough to vote and have a say in what
choose
war
the commander in chief that kills you.
Yeah.
What was the rule before that?
21 in most states.
Also, they lowered it.
Yeah, lowered to 18. Uh-huh.
Making it possible for me to vote in 72 at age 20.
That was your first time.
Mm-hmm. While the Nixon part of this war was still going on.
So were you part of the big upsurge in youth voting?
Yeah.
After the election cycle after the passage?
Say that again?
Were you part of the big upsurge in youth voting?
Yeah, I sure was, uh-huh. Yep, proud of that. Voted against Nixon.
Against Nixon?
The dude that comes in here sometimes, you see that friend of mine that subs?
Mm-hmm.
With the shaved head and the little hair on
the
back? Yeah, yeah.
What's his name?
Brad Tinsley. Been friends with him since high school, but he was up visiting me at my apartment the night before the election in 72. And I said, well, did you vote for McGovern? He goes, no, I voted for Nixon. I voted for Nixon? I voted for Nixon. He voted for the war. And he says, look, he meant this too when he said it. Now that you know this guy, you can believe it. He looked at me and he said, don't you realize when Nixon wins, he's going to take the names of all the people like you that voted against him and put you in camps? I'm going to be remembered as being on his side. He was serious. That's how much
know.
He feared Nixon was going to become
Nixon.
The fascist dictator. I worried a little after he said it, too. So crazy we were back then.
But they really liked a tricky dip.
Yep, they did. And that's war-related, too. The 1972 re-election is a manipulation of the peace treaty that was almost finished and done in October of 72. And the election occurs, and Nixon gets reelected, and the treaty falls apart until next January. Yeah, it sure looks suspicious. So 62 is something you know all about. It used to be difficult to teach, but you've been living it.
What is it?
What do you mean?
The debate grew, should we in wartime be loyal to our government no matter what, or do we have the right to protest bad policy? That seems so easy now, right?
Yeah.
But back then,
that's the big thing in the 60s.
If you protested Vietnam, even if you could, or my parents would say this, I heard a lot of adults say this, yes, the war is a mistake. Yes, it's failing. Yes, it's a bad policy.
But
good Americans support the country and don't protest.
There's a different
it's worse
thinking.
To be a treasonable person and not support.
There's a different thinking from like the parent generation.
Because they had come through the World War II occasion.
Yeah.
Got to win the war or else.
Compared to now, yeah, we might be there, we might not.
Well, what you come from is a legacy of, you come from my legacy, and that is we've been some good wars and we've been in some bad wars, and so now we've been into two bad wars in terms of Vietnam
well,
and this one.
World
so you
War
have a different legacy.
World War II was like a
the so-called good war.
Well, there wasn't much opposition.
Most of the opposition died with Pearl Harbor, and the little bit of opposition that lived on into 42 was
some of the draft opposition.
Shame. Well, a little bit.
How did you net ranking in regards to World War II?
She voted against it, as you recall.
And she never.
But then I don't know her. I don't think she actively campaigned.
Yeah, you said that she was never hearing that thing.
Oh, I don't care.
But she was still protesting Vietnam
mm-hmm.
and Korea.
68. Yes. She was just basically pacifist anyway. But now 63 down through 67 is something that I have a great personal feeling for because that's me coming of age in terms of high school and to college. But what's so strange is I always feel like 63 through 67 is something that is so, I'm so biased in this movement that I'll go overboard and teach way more than what's on the AP test. So lots of times I tend to not cover it. 2 years ago, it was one of the choice essays. And if I had gone into it, I'd cover it. Now, but since it was 2 years ago, is it likely to come back? Like, not for a while, I don't think. But you're pretty familiar with it anyway. It is this, in the atmosphere of civil rights, opposing unjust laws, in this atmosphere of opposing an unjust war, there was a cultural climate in which being rebellious, being a protester, being suspicious of establishment was easy to do. In fact, it was marketed. That's what was in the writings, that's what was in the music, that was in the movies. If you look at the late 60s, early 70s movies, you see these kind of disrespect for authority themes coming
out. Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
That's Timothy Leary's quote. You know. So there is a climate that feeds that. And I think culturally where this all starts, having gone through it, is in the Beatles.
First, I also have to remember there's like a year here where pot is legal because they ruled the first law unconstitutional.
Up until about 62, I think.
Yeah, and then like in between 62 and 63 is legal until they passed that Controlled Substances Act.
Now, the Beatles came to prominence in England about 61, 62, and by America they hit in late 63. Around the summer. And the thing about the Beatles, when they first start out, if you compare them to the later years, they're pretty conservative. I mean, they dress all the same way, and they dress in old-fashioned things, and your haircut is the Beatle haircut. That right there was the big, dangerous, way-too-long, thuggish haircut to have. This right here was getting threatening. This guy's already a Russian. But this was about the length of the Beatles' hair when they came to America. I was a Native American. But that's the only one that would have hair like this. Okay. But there was a certain kind of flippant, in-your-face attitude that the Beatles demonstrated that was not the usual nice guy, kind of well-behaved atmosphere. And that's what people picked up on. And, of course, as 64 turns to 5 and 6, then the experimentation with drugs and the longer hair and the wilder cultural patterns and the free sex affair, all that stuff, yeah, all that grows. And it grows with civil rights agitation. It grows with anti-war protests. So the 60s, in many ways, are the beatnik movement finally comes above ground and turns into a widespread movement. Although the majority of people really didn't embrace those values, didn't embrace those appearances. It's still a minority of people.
When did LSD hit?
Well, it was, again, like you said, it was legal in the early 60s and then outlawed around 64, 65 in most states and federally.
Because the federal law banning like marijuana and stuff, you had to bring the drugs with you to get a tax stamp in order to possess the drugs. So
they could bust you on the way.
And you present to them, you're in jail. So they ruled that you were self-incrimination and unconstitutional.
In item 66, this is a place that became kind of a location of the hippie movement. This is kind of like a place to be. Haight-Ashbury, San Francisco. If you ever go to San Francisco, have you been to San Francisco to visit? The Haight Street runs from Golden Gate Park all the way back up to the Japanese New Japan Center on Geary. But right around the Golden Gate Park area for about 5 or 6 blocks is where all the hippie movement started, and it's been resurrected and marketed in its back, but it's done with taste and flair. And the Ashbury crossover street was kind of like the center point at that place. Greenwich Village, New York, and Haight-Ashbury, San Francisco were the two kind of origin points of the cultural hippie movement. The Woodstock concert, you've heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
The original, held in 1969 in New York. Here's the thing behind that concert that made it become such a historic event. It was the first open-air, gigantic, huge stadium-like, although it's not a stadium, concert.
Did they have just one stage?
They built multiple faceted stages so the crowd in the big huge arena could see
the Onion headline was 20 music acts, 20,000 setbacks.
The concert anticipated about 50,000 people, the promoters did. About 450,000 people showed up.
Yeah.
Well, after they sold all the tickets, people tore down fences and came in on their own for free. And so then it became somewhat of a big concern by the promoters. For 3 days straight, how does 500,000 people get fed and bathroom and taken care of? If they do drugs, it keeps them from... A few did, but a couple of drug overdoses and somebody got ran over by a tractor, and that was it. There were no fights. There were no beatings. It was all very, very peaceful.
That's because they were all violent.
And therefore, that's what... It wasn't planned to be this way, but the way it was later billed was... If you get together that many people who are concerned about peace, love, and music rather than war and prejudice, you can have 500,000 people get together and just care and love each other rather than start wars. And so that was kind of like this political message of Woodstock came out. Of course, a lot of what's not remembered is that the military had to go in and bring bathrooms and feed them and clothe them and shelter them. And it was helicopters, military helicopters, that came in and gave all this supplies to people.
Oh, they did set up condom stands. Some enterprising capitalists set up condom stands.
Do you remember, were you alive around on the 20th anniversary or 25th anniversary? Was it 1989, maybe?
Nope.
Damn.
1990.
Maybe it was the 25th anniversary, 94. Remember,
I've seen like...
Well, what happened was, when they redid it, I think it was 25 years later, in 94... That's where so many people came in and sold bottles of water for $5 a bottle in the 100-degree heat. And everybody got really angry at how much promoters and capitalists tried to make money, and there were riots that did break out in protest to that. So it was a complete disaster failure, the re-concert. Which, you know, for the naive people, that's not the word for it, for the biased people like me, I'd say we liberals in the 60s had it right, you Reaganites in the 90s, there's the harvest you reap, but that's not fair. A lot of music acts that were just getting a start were at Woodstock and then became big, prominent, famous permanents like Santana and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Hendrix was pretty well known then. So in fact, Hendrix was the biggest act to be there. The Who was on their way up at that time. Hendrix was the biggest act there. He demanded to be last. He wanted to be the finale. But if you see the movie, it's really worth watching the movie. You find out that almost everybody's gone. So when he plays, there's just a few thousand people left. You see all the dirt and the abandoned areas. Mm-hmm. That's what he played to at the end. Now, I've got to balance this off by adding number 67 with it, or at the end of 67. 6 months later, another concert was put together, a free concert by the Rolling Stones in a speedway in Altamont, California. It was supposed to be like Woodstock Part 2. Anticipating, since it's a free concert, again, crowds of multi-hundred thousands to come, the Rolling Stones made a very, very stupid mistake. They thought that there needed to be some kind of emergency security in case things get out of hand, so they made a deal with the Hells Angels Motorcycle Club. They could come in for free and have all the beer they want if they would keep the peace.
People were
knifed and hit with pool cues and shot. And it was not a large number of people, but it occurred, and it's occurred on film. If you see the movie, the Altamont concert, you can see it in film. So how does the Altamont situation shape Woodstock Nation?
It makes it kind of seem like all these people are rowdy hooligans.
Yeah. The argument is this is not the utopia that these hippies said it could be. You can't get 100,000 people together and just drug, sex, and rock and roll and get along. The reality is human nature sucks, and this is what's going to happen. My side argues that's what happens when you get Hell's Angels for cops. But that there is, you know, did you read about the Beatniks in the 50s? It's in that chapter 31. What they like to ask is, how was the attitude and movement of youth in the 50s comparable to the 60s? How was the youth attitude of in the 50s comparable to the 60s?
Well, the 50s is conservative.
And it's,
they all wanted to be G.I. Joe or what?
Yeah, they just want to be good, loyal Americans.
Well, then they're all in Korea. But
how about the 60s?
It was all protest the war, burn your draft card, good candidate.
Yet what I really want to stress is this, that great, great majority of youth in the 60s were just as conservative as the 50s. It's the fringe.
But they work at NASA.
It's the fringe of the 60s that we're talking about right now. This, it's misleading for us to say that this is the way all youth were in the 60s. It's like saying the roaring 20s and ignoring half the country. If you say in the roaring 20s that everybody's partying, that's just city people.
Okay.
So probably a small percentage of them.
What's like the demographic?
In Arkansas, it was like Emma Holland's father and me and Brad out of the whole graduating class. I mean, there was probably in the Deep South, one out of every 30 people were hippie-like or less. In other more urban industrial areas, maybe 1/4, but never as much as a half. So real, in reality, the 50s youth and the 60s youth are still pretty much conservative and non-wild people. But the imagery is much greater in the 60s than the 50s.
So in high school, you were like the hippie communist.
Yeah.
Socialist.
I could just see him exactly like he is right now.
Without the mustache.
Brooks, a little bit shorter without the mustache.
Same shade in his hair.
Yeah, same multiple shades, the different dyes. It's a wild time. The 68 election. We got to do the 68 election.
So how long do you think we're going to go to?
Until you guys say I got to go.
Well, let's do the 68 election.
So I go at like 6.
It's only 5:30.
Okay, we'll
go. Yeah,
5:40.
Is this
not
this
as good?
Who's in the 68?
Okay, let's back up and let's talk about some things that will help you understand. Who won the 60 election?
Kennedy.
Who did he beat?
Nixon.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Who were it was in the 64 election?
LBJ.
LBJ and Goldwater.
Against Goldwater. Who won?
LBJ.
Who was Goldwater's running mate? I mean, Johnson's running mate.
Humphrey.
Yes. So the vice president became Hubert Humphrey, a longtime civil rights advocate since the 40s in Minnesota, became the vice president. Why does Johnson not run in 68?
Because he screwed over by Vietnam.
Pressure.
The pressures of Vietnam and urban riots and protests, etc. So he chooses not to run. That means in the Democratic Party, now suddenly it's wide open for who wants to run. Can you imagine if in 2004... as late as just 6 months before the primary start, Bush had announced he's not running.
Like McCain, Giuliani, or just jumps in.
Yeah, that's what you have in 68 is suddenly a bunch of people jumping into the fray. And
now they had everyone just jump in 5 years before.
That includes Robert Kennedy, John's brother, who had been I didn't mention this earlier.
He
was Attorney General for JFK. That could be on the AP test. I didn't mention that. His brother JFK. Yeah. He remained Attorney General for Johnson after Kennedy died, but not long because there was not good blood between them and eventually left.
Between them?
With Johnson and RFK. In fact, RFK Stadium in Washington had some political problems with it. Johnson did not want it named that, and pro-RFK people got the name in a hurry before he could stop it. And so RFK is running for president. He is the farthest, no, that's not very true. He is one of the left-leaning candidates. He's very much the most liked by minorities, especially the black population. We really trusted him to promote more civil rights. But then another character jumps in.
Not yet.
Eugene McCarthy. Eugene McCarthy just died last year. It's not Joseph McCarthy. It's a different. Joseph McCarthy was from Wisconsin. Minnesota. Eugene McCarthy.
When did McCarthy die?
John.
Which one, Eugene?
Joe
was in 57.
He didn't last very long in that run.
No, he didn't. Eugene McCarthy's campaign issue is Dennis Kucinich this time around. Who is Dennis Kucinich? He's the Ohio senator, Ohio congressman, who's been anti-war from the start. He ran in 2004 on the anti-war ticket. He's running on the anti-war. He's the far left, almost fringe, can't get elected anti-war candidate.
He offered Bill Maher Secretary of State, I believe. Actually, he offered him Vice President for the Secretary of State.
McCarthy wanted immediate withdrawal from troops out of Vietnam. Just immediate. No negotiations, no timetables, just immediate withdrawal. RFK advocated timetables but withdrawal. Those two are the main leading candidates seeking a nomination. A third one from Alabama, as in segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation
Wallace.
Forever, George Wallace, also seeking. When Wallace comes to realize in the primary race that he's not going to win primaries and not get the nomination, rather than drop out of the race, he starts a third party movement called the American Independent Party. Wallace will be a very important factor in this election because he will take all the Deep South states with him. And he'll take 69 electoral votes. The last candidate to receive electoral votes as a third-party candidate, and the first one since TR 1912 to receive any. And the question has to be, would all those deep southern states that voted for Wallace, would they have gone traditionally Democratic for Humphrey, or would they have gone conservative with Nixon?
That probably with Nixon.
Probably would have gone for Nixon.
Because remember, yeah, there's a big shift over.
Because he needed more votes.
And Nixon won anyway, so he would have won by a bigger margin with that, if you can guess. So Wallace is in it as a third-party candidate. Humphrey and McCarthy get into these primaries. Oh, by the way, also one of the reasons that the President Johnson dropped out was because in the New Hampshire primary, they didn't really campaign for him. McCarthy came in second to Johnson, and that's what caused him to realize, I don't want to fight through these struggles. So as you get closer and closer to the time, McCarthy and Kennedy are taking turn winning primary elections. Kennedy's in the lead over McCarthy. And in June of 1968, the California primary comes. And I think he's already won the Oregon primary. So when he wins the California primary, it's clearly obvious he's got the delegates to be nominated in Chicago. In fact, his last comments after accepting the victory was, now it's on Chicago and win. Bang. That's when Sirhan shot him in the kitchen. So after we would win on TV all the time, I used to always be real cautious about, now it's on to Chicago, let's win comments at the quiz bowl tournament.
With the extra magic bullet somehow came out of a 6-bullet gun?
Out of Sirhan's?
Yeah. Where was the 7th bullet?
Where was
in
the
wall?
At?
In the bottom of a hotel where they were staying or where they were celebrating.
I've seen a video of that.
The shooting and the stopping and everything. So Kennedy dies. Robert Kennedy dies. And that leaves, you would think, whom to be the nominee?
McCarthy.
Eugene McCarthy would be the nominee. Now he's way left to center for, but that's all that's left in the primary races. But when they get to Chicago for the convention, they nominate Hubert Humphrey, the sitting vice president, who had announced his candidacy but had entered no primaries. This is a day and age when primary elections did not bind delegates. You could win all the primaries and still not get the nomination. And that's the great protest in Chicago. Inside the convention, the Democratic convention, is delegates arguing that it's not fair for someone like an old hack politician to get to be the nominee when he didn't enter the primaries, and McCarthy ought to be. But the party was not in the hands of those people. The party was still in the hands of the traditional leaders. And also a lot of the... Is that you? Is that me?
Yeah.
There was a lot of argument about whether or not the delegations represented way too much white males rather than minorities. So fights over who should be in the delegation, fights over whether or not Humphrey should be.
Neil? Yeah, can I call you right ahead? I'm just ending up an AP lecture. Okay, I'll call you right. So
do you ever saw that part?
Just put it in the paper today. It'll be in tomorrow's listing.
Yes, in fact, that car is a 1993 Toyota Camry DX with 160,000 miles on it and in good, fairly good condition, and it's only $1,850. Anyway, back to the 1968 election. So Humphrey gets the nomination. There are protests that break out on the floor of the convention hall about the way he got the nomination, about the rules are set up, and about the delegations not respecting equal representation of minorities. Out in the streets, however, some 10,000 protesters, we talked about this, have shown up to protest the war, led by Abby Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, the Chicago 8 people we read the other day. And the police end up launching, on the orders of Mayor Daley, a police riot. So if you were the average American citizen like I was in high school watching all this on TV, And you see police beating up people in the streets, police beating people up in the convention floor in 1968. What would you think about the Democratic Party? Yeah, they're destroying themselves. They're falling apart from the inside. No matter where they stand on things, is this who you want to elect as president? So Humphrey, who was ahead of the Republicans in the early polls before this convention, or the Democrats, I mean, in the polls, they look like they can't even keep the peace within their own party, let alone end the war in Vietnam. That makes it possible for the Republicans to meet in Miami, same people that tried to levitate the Pentagon tried to go down and levitate the Republican convention that didn't exist. But Nixon gets the nomination, and then
there's awesome. I want to go do that.
68 was
should have worked in Miami. It's so much lower, closer to sea level.
There is a book out called 1968, and it just talks about all the zany, crazy stuff that goes on in that year.
Do you have any idea what these people are called?
Which people?
The levitators.
Norman Mailer writes about some. I can't remember the name. Here's something that occurred at the 68 convention that was of interest. These same people that I'm talking about organized the YIP, the Youth International Party. And the Youth International Party brought a big giant papier-mâché pig, and they named him Pigasus. And Pigasus was going to be their candidate for president. And for short, what did you call the Youth International Party?
Yippies.
From where the phrase yuppies, which is, means something different, young urban professional. But the phrase yuppies is a play on the word yippies. And the yippies were these kind of sarcastic protesting people that nominated the papier-mâché pig Pigasus for president. At the outskirts of the convention.
Giant poster of Madeline's.
Yeah, that's what the Democrats had to face in 68. And Nixon.
That should have been like...
several ballots. They should have run him.
That should have been on several ballots. I'm pretty sure.
I think you could get the votes to vote.
So you can see why in this race you have Humphrey for the Democrats, Nixon for the Republicans, Wallace for the AIP. Nixon wins the election by only 300,000 vote mark.
It says on the sheet.
Oh, okay. 300,060 and 500,000. But I mean, it's very close. Very, very close vote margin. So even though he won, it was one of those. He barely lost in 60. I'm setting us up for the future. He barely lost in 60. He barely wins in 68. Now, he wants to win re-election in 72, not barely. He wants to win big. He wants to make sure there's no doubt that he wins re-election. That's one of the great explanations for what happened.
Watergate?
Yeah. The Watergate break-in, the dirty tricks, the planted false stories about candidates, all the maneuvering he did to eliminate potential Democratic opponents and steal the secrets of the campaign out of Watergate is built on this, I lost one by a hair in 60 and I won one by a narrow margin in 68. I won a big victory in 72. So that's kind of where I wanted to bring us up to.
He did get elected in 72?
He did get reelected, and some of that was that manipulation of the treaty. So there we have Nixon winning over Humphrey by a 500,000 vote margin in 70. We'll pick up the next time we do this, probably on Wednesday, at 71 and move on.
What's today's date?
30th.
Are there 31 days in April? No.
It's Saturday.
So what we're doing is with the Wednesday and Friday presentation and the Saturday presentation, we can finish the material, and I'm thinking to use much of the weekend and next week to go back and review all the stuff we need to know. We need to be thinking of what could be essay potential topics all year long. And one other thing is, the World War II material in this, you haven't had a test on it, you haven't studied it for a test, which means you haven't studied it with the fear that you should.
Which material?
So let me say this. What the classes don't know is you will. Well, they're going to find out if they listen online. Let's just stop this here.